Dr. Hoffman here. This Intelligent Medicine podcast is brought to you by Super Beets. I personally take Super Beets when I need a power boost. It's my favorite product. Super Beets gives me energy and stamina for my busy day. Right now, get a one-month supply free with your first order. Check out the Dr. Hoffman special right now at IntelligentBeets.com. That's IntelligentBeets.com. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're going to talk about a very important aspect of medicine, which is dental medicine. We don't get to talk too much about it because we concentrate on nutrition. We talk about various types of metabolic disorders and cancer and all manner of maladies, but so seldom do we focus on the importance of the mouth and the teeth in terms of our overall health picture. Today we're going to talk to an expert practitioner. He's Dr. Mark Cannon. He is a pediatric dentist. He is both a practitioner and an internationally acknowledged lecturer. He lectures all over the world on subjects related to innovative approaches to dentistry. And he practices where are you located now? You're located at the Division of Dentistry, the Feinberg School of Medicine at Northwestern University, correct?
Correct, and I'm a professor at the Feinberg School of Medicine, Division of Dentistry, Department of Otolaryngology, and that's part of Northwestern University in Chicago, Illinois.
Now, and that's where your practice is based?
My practice is out at Grove Medical Center, which is in one of the suburbs of Chicago. In one of the northwest suburbs. So I have the privilege to and the honor to be a professor at the Feinberg School of Medicine, where I teach and I do research. I'm the research director of the dental residents at Ann and Robert Laurie Children's Hospital in Chicago. And I do a good amount of research out of the Special Infectious Disease Lab at Children's Hospital. I work with a biological materialist at Northwestern, and I work out of Argonne National Labs. So I'm very busy.
You are a busy and dynamic guy. You've got a lot of different hats that you wear. The question I would pose to you, you work a lot with children. You're a pediatric dentist primarily. What's up with kids' teeth these days? Kids have so many dental problems. I know you also have a subspecialty in orthodontics. So why is it that kids are getting cavities, kids are having crooked teeth? Is this natural, or is this something that has to do with our lifestyle and our environment?
Well, a little bit of everything, of course. And to be specific on things, I'm a pediatric dentist, but I've also done a lot of research in biological materials and in microbiology. I do orthodontics, but I'm not a subspecialist in orthodontics. But pediatric dentistry is also the specialty of the disabled. And so we take care of all the patients with severe medical needs who are medically compromised. That's why I work at Ann and Robert Laurie Children's Hospital. I mean, every day in my practice, I treat patients with severe medical issues, autistic patients. Like today, I treat a number of autistic patients. And we do all aspects of care for these kids who have many special needs. And it's something you just don't learn overnight. This requires lots of experience and a lot of training. You mentioned orthodontics. I'm certified in Invisalign, and I do many other orthodontic appliances, but that's because a lot of these patients require these special needs. As for, the epidemiology of everything, what's going on, well, we had made progress with things like dental decay, but then we've kind of lost sight of our goals, and we've had many issues come up in the meanwhile where, even though they say there's fewer active cavities out there because more children are receiving dental care, the actual rate of dental decay is still up there. That's dietary, unfortunately. And a portion of it is actually genetic. There's about 22% of Northern Europeans have a situation called molar incisor hypomineralization, where the teeth come in with these genetic defects.
For instance, you say hypomineralization, like hypothyroid, not enough mineral in the teeth, and that causes the teeth to come in misaligned or improperly?
Well, because they're far more prone to decay.
Oh, to decay, okay.
Far more prone to decay.
They're more vulnerable, they're less resistant.
Right, and you find this in northern climes. The English are famous for this. They suffer from two maladies, one the National Healthcare System.
Right, notoriously bad dentistry. Right.
Yeah, and they do have bad dentistry. And the other thing is the fact that they were predisposed to bad dental needs anyway to begin with. That's actually why the...
So it's not just Austin Powers in the movie, with the bad teeth.
No,
it's
he's the perfect example of the fact that they have very poor treatment for their orthodontic needs. That's why, actually, if you see Americans traveling in other countries, people always recognize Americans because our teeth are so perfect.
Interesting.
So perfect. I mean, and almost half of kids get some orthodontic treatment, so we're really into the aesthetics and the function and the value of the dentition more so than some other countries. Now, as you know, crowding is getting worse and worse and worse because actually, we're starting to be missing more and more teeth because the jaws are smaller. If you look at modern man jaws, are much smaller than if you go back to, let's say, Neanderthal jaws, which actually had 36 teeth, and we now have 32.
Well, do you subscribe to the Western Price school of thought, which is that, he went around the world, he was a dentist, and he took pictures of native populations before the advent of Western civilization and diet, and they had beautiful straight teeth and normal jaws, and then they showed people after the ravages of Western civilization and Western food arrived, and they had bad teeth and misaligned jaws. Is there really such a relationship to nutrition?
Well, I think to a certain degree, if you have normal, real diet, you have better function, and you get the maximum out of what you are genetically given. If you have people, for instance, you see this, and as you well know, in cultures where they have actually improved over the starvation that used to have, now you see a skyrocketing height in that group. Mm-hmm. You might look at Japan as an example, before and after they had an abundance of food when they were having just a cup full of rice every day.
Right. Yao Ming from China, who was in the NBA and the total anomaly 50 years ago in China.
Yep. Now you go, you travel these countries, you go, where are all these tall people come from? In my case, I say that. And so, yeah, because you have a genetic limit, as you well know, and then you have the environmental aspect. And then, of course, you have how the environmental aspect will trigger things epigenetically, where it can trigger a lot of changes. So what we're trying to do is adapt. And what we're finding is, as you know, that our knowledge base is constantly changing. Some things we know are true. The association between oral health and systemic health. And they've known that for thousands of years. And you go back to the writings of the Roman historian Tacitus, and he describes how in the Roman slave markets, they would always do an oral inspection with the things they did immediately. If you look at medieval art, which will have beautiful paintings of the slave markets of the Middle East, you see them doing oral inspections. Hmm. There's even a wall mural showing Ramses II after the Battle of Kadesh with captured Hittite prisoners. Hmm. And they're doing an oral inspection. And according to my Egyptian friends, what the hieroglyphics say about it is that those who had good teeth were spared to be made into slaves. Those who had bad teeth were put to death.
Wow.
Because they were worthless long term. You know the American slave markets.
Sure.
If you look through our current history and prior to the Civil War, the American slave markets, oral inspections are often depicted in all the lithographs and everything from the time, the drawings of the time. So we've known forever the value of that. And the how if you're tense, you grind your teeth and so forth, and the gnashing and all the stuff you find in the Bible from it. So, yeah, there's been writings about this forever and forever. Socrates wrote about it, for instance. So we know the association. Now, recently, in the last couple of years especially, there's been a huge wealth of publications and all these great journals. I mean, journals of, you know, like gastroenterology and the British Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology, about the importance of oral health. And like in the British Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology, they did a systematic review of the oral hygiene programs with pregnant women and showing you could reduce premature birth by 50%. That was just published, I think, in 2006.
Wow.
And that's a huge figure, and that's what the British government was saying, is we can reduce the amount of preemie birth by 50% by maintaining good oral hygiene during the pregnancy. And they, in fact, they had a 50% reduction in the weight discrepancies with the preemies, too. They were their birth rate was much, much better. And the funny thing is, you know, one of the things we have to talk about with this is, what can you do about it as a person yourself? Well, there's products like they have xylitol in them, and xylitol is a naturally occurring 5-carbon sugar that actually inhibits a lot of the bacteria that have been associated with premature birth. And one particularly, like Fusobacterium nucleatum, it's a bacteria that produces a protein. It's called FADA. It's an adhesin. It's a bacterial virulence protein. And what it does is it allows this bacteria to attach to a lot of cells. That's how it invades through the gum tissue. The Fusobacterium nucleatum can attach, break through the attachments of the mucosal cells, causing invasion. They open a pathway for many other bacteria to get in. They get in the bloodstream, and they can cause miscarriages. And that's been well documented, too.
So the periodontal disease may seed the bloodstream with bad bacteria, which causes some sort of reaction in the body that impairs pregnancy.
Right. And actually what they've shown is, and this is again from some really wonderful publications from the Public Library Science One, where they have shown that once these bacteria get in, they get into the amniotic fluid. There is this maternal pathway. That's why we have maternal imprinting. Now, maternal imprinting goes both ways, and it's first really described a lot in an article in the journal Pediatrics in 2007, where they talked about this maternal pathway and maternal imprinting, where bacteria picked up from the gut of the mother, transported through the bloodstream, encased in mononuclear cells in the floating around the bloodstream, and they're actually viable bacteria, and they arrive to the mammary glands, and they allow the mother to excrete through the, or secrete rather, through the mammary glands, these viable bacteria that maternally imprint the child, so their gut has appropriate bacteria. But it also occurs prior to delivery, where it goes through the placenta, and it gets into the amniotic fluid, and the baby, the infant, or the, I should say the fetus, swallows the amniotic fluid and seeds the gut, and you can find all these DNA remnants of these bacteria in the meconium.
And so we know it has either a beneficial priming effect or a harmful,
yes,
a negative effect.
Both. You know, it protects. And I'll give you a classic example of some of our research we've done on this, the gluten sensitivity. Now, gluten sensitivity, we're now calling an oral disease. And this is some stuff published a couple years ago from our colleagues at Harvard School of Medicine and the Goldman School of Medicine and the Foresight Center, three very, very highly reputable institutions, I would say. And they found that in the mouth, there are 150 species of bacteria that break down gluten. Now, these are very important bacteria, and they really discussed three of them. They're from the Rothia family, and one of them, Rothia denticariosa, is actually maternally imprinted. It's one of the bacteria that the mother gets through her bloodstream, surviving bacteria, encased and protected, delivered to the baby or the fetus before the baby is born. And so it's really, to me, fascinating, because there are certain streptococcus strains, too, that we feel are very protective bacteria. And they do know, again, studies from Foresight, that certain strains or species of streptococcus, like strep sanguis, is very protective. Strep aureus is very protective. And strep salivarius, that bacteria, protects you a lot from things like strep throat, because they actually kill the other strep. And that's how probiotics work. And I know we've talked about probiotics, that they have three major mechanisms, three major and many minor, but one of those, they just compete with the pathogenic, the bad bacteria. They compete strongly with them. So you have this competitive inhibition. And secondly, they produce a lot of things that kill the bad bacteria. They produce like hydrogen peroxide, like Streptococcus aureus does, and Strep uberus, and the hydrogen peroxide kills all these pathogenic bacteria that hate oxygen. And the third thing is they can boost your immune system. And that's where a lot of the lactobacilli and the bifidobacteria come in.
So you're saying that the bacteria that inhabit our mouths can have an influence on our gut, of course, and on our whole immune system, but also may have exert either a protective effect against celiac disease or make one more susceptible to developing celiac disease.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's why you see epidemiologically these giant increases in certain diseases that started to skyrocket when we started to use more antimicrobials in the mouth.
Huh.
And I rail against the use of using antimicrobials.
Potent things like Listerine, you know, and chlorhexidine, things like that, that have a damaging effect on the mouth flora.
Yeah, you know, there's times you're going to need to use something because maybe you have a rampant infection going on.
Right.
Just like an antibiotic, there's a time and a place. But just like an antibiotic, you don't use it unless you really need it.
Right.
And we've become so much more conservative, and we've cut back so much on the use of antibiotics, and I'm really hoping people will realize that the antimicrobials have an effect. For instance, just less than a year ago, there was that wonderful publication on how chlorhexidine, which you mentioned, mouthwash, raises people's blood pressure.
I was just about to ask that, because I just interviewed a guy who is a nitric oxide expert, Dr. Nathan Bryant of University of Texas, and he mentioned that factoid and said that actually your nitric oxide gets made from the dietary nitrates, but you need the right bacteria in your mouth to accomplish that. That's fascinating.
And those nitrosamine-producing bacteria, they're killed off by chlorhexidine, so it's a dual-edged sword. You know, it's collateral damage we have to worry about. It's when I lecture on it, I'll show this beautiful old French town that at the end of World War II was carpet bombed because the Germans had dug in so deep. Man, we got the Germans out. How many French civilians died, and the destruction was massive. And I understand the logic and why we had to do it. Of course, I'm not arguing against that. But it's the same concept. We have all this collateral damage, and that's where we have to be very, very cautious and careful in how we use things. And the gut, you know it and I know it, is so important, not just for the immune system, but for our neurological status. And that's why, you know, people who are healthy orally tend to have a better aspect of life and a better outlook on life. And there's been many studies in the past about that. You know, people who floss live 7 years longer on the average and everything else. I mean, they have less stress in their life. Like, it's like having a dog. If you have a dog in your house, you live longer. You know, all these little great things, they've always come out with these studies. But it's absolutely true, too, because neurologically, some of our neurotransmitters are heavily influenced, or the original component of it comes from the gut itself. You know, it's how it's produced. That's why if you have a large turkey dinner, you know, for Thanksgiving, you feel very sedate afterwards. Of course, in my case, a glass of wine probably helps too.
Well, it's a little bit of, Kentucky bourbon can put you right over the edge.
A little bourbon always helps a whole lot, putting you over the edge. But in the meanwhile, they've done all these great studies, and what we're correlating, you know, like with the gluten sensitivity, we went back ourselves, and we looked at what kills a lot of these very important bacteria like the Rothia denticariosa, and we found, yes, there's products you can use that come from your grocery store, from your drugstore, that kill Rothia denticariosa. Okay. One thing that did not was, again, xylitol, and that's why you see more and more dentists recommending xylitol products to their patients, because we know it's safe. It does not inhibit the good bacteria. It inhibits only the pathogenic bacteria. And from that aspect, we have a win-win for everyone. We can get rid of the bad guys and keep the good guys.
Now, not all these products seem to be, stack up. But there's some products that incorporate a little bit of xylitol. I noticed that they're now introducing some chewing gums that have xylitol, but they're mostly sorbitol. They're sort of sugar-free gums. But does sorbitol do the trick, or is it really xylitol that's the business end of these products?
Well, xylitol really is. Sorbitol itself is a very weak cousin. It just happens to be cheaper than xylitol, and so manufacturers are adding it. It has no additive effect whatsoever to the xylitol, and the more sorbitol you put in, probably the less positive effect you have. I was going to say, we went on, by the way, and did a lot of our own research on this. Beyond that, we did a lot of bactericide studies showing that some of the pathogens inhibit the good bacteria by producing these toxic products that kill off the good bacteria that are protective ones for you. And then we went and we isolated from different sources, natural sources, 16 more strains of very potent gluten digesters. These are super gluten metabolizers. And one of the strains was very immune to all the oral hygiene products out there. It was not inhibited by anything. He's the Superman of gluten probiotics. And we're still working on, getting all the specification done and trying to make sure we have what we need to eventually bring that gluten probiotic to market.
So you're saying this could conceivably be something that would prevent, or could it possibly even reverse celiac disease? Because once celiac disease is underway, it seems like that might be a tall order.
Yeah, it would be something to reduce the incidence of it. It'd be more for preventive. Once you start to have some symptoms with gluten products, you would start just taking this to, and it would probably be as, because we want to see the mouth with it, it would probably be a chewable that you would just...
Maybe use it on people who are genetically predisposed. If we have gene tests that show the predisposition. Not everyone with the gene gets it, but can get it if certain circumstances promote it.
And that's a large portion of the population. I mean, of Northern Europeans, it would be HLA, DQ, and A, and DQ8, you have... up to 43% of the Northern European population are positive for those two genes.
Right.
The DQ8 and DQ2, sorry. And so that's just something for us to keep in mind. Now, in the meanwhile, we're looking back at this oral environment, not just to prevent cavities, because we have some good probiotics for that. There's some already on the market that really reduce the cavities.
Cavity-preventing probiotics?
Yes, there are. There's from Evora. It's called Evora Plus. It's from our friends at Orogenics.
And commercially available now.
Commercially available. And,
wow.
I actually did the laboratory studies on that, and we also did the clinical trial.
Give us that reference again, because that's a real call to action for our listeners. What's that product called?
Well, it's from a company named Orogenics, and it's called Evora, and Evora Plus and Evora Pro. Evora, it has three probiotic bacteria in it, and we actually, myself, I'm the lead author and investigator, we had a clinical trial with 60 patients, and we followed them for 3 years, and these were all very, very cavity-prone patients. At the end of the 3 years, we had 53 that were left for follow-up, and of the 53, only 3 were really still caries prone.
Wow.
The others were all converted over. It's hugely statistically significant, and we're publishing that in the Journal of Clinical Pediatric Dentistry. Our previous laboratory studies, which showed it was very effective, has already been published, and we're hoping that the profession will start to adopt the use of probiotics for prevention of decay. In the meanwhile, there is probiotics for prevention of gum disease, and that's called PerioBalance, and that's marketed in the United States by Butler Sunstar, and it's found in drugstores. You just have to sometimes ask them where it's at, because they don't put them out on display very
wow.
much.
Yeah, but this is actually a revelation to me. Why Why aren't all dentists prescribing this? I'm pretty sure that this has not really penetrated to the general community dentist, because I've never heard of this.
Well, that's probably because there's not a lot of financial gain from anyone to be using it. I mean, quite frankly, there's not a... These companies are not making much money at all on these probiotics, and it's really easy for competitors to come along with a similar strain.
Because it's a natural biological. You can't patent a natural living organism. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. They try to do a copyright on the strain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they copyright the strain number and all that. And these strain numbers are very important. You can have the same species, as you know, but the strain itself is important. It's like a study on Lactobacillus acidophilus, and they studied 16 strains, and 6 were beneficial and 10 were not.
Right.
Same species, so a person going to GNC might think they're getting a good Lactobacillus acidophilus, but they're not. Now, the PerioBalance has a very famous probiotic in it, Lactobacillus reuteri.
Reuteri, yeah.
Reuteri. And reuteri has been associated not just prevention of periodontal disease.
Obesity.
Obesity, right.
Yes.
Very important one for obesity.
Yeah.
And that was a great study. I love that study that came out on that. And the authors themselves were so surprised that they even put that in their article. They said, surprisingly, we found that this oral probiotic prevented weight gain, and it did so by influencing the immune system. I'm so glad you brought up obesity, because that is, again, something that we have to look at the mouth for, because, you know, the GI tract starts at the lips. That's the beginning of the GI tract. And we firmly believe that if you change the bacteria in the mouth, it does all the way down, because Lactobacillus reuteri, as you mentioned, it's found often in the intestine, small intestine. But it survives well in the mouth, and it survives a trip through the stomach.
Interesting.
Yeah, wow. Because they're acid-loving bacteria. And it's like a lot of Clostridia. I mean, if you really try to kill it, it just forms a spore anyway, and so it's hard to kill. And like Lactobacillus reuteri, if you take it in a form of a fermented milk product, like with a probiotic FMPP, like a kefir, then the kefir helps it survive going through, because these bacteria just keep their cell wall intact, simply eat up. And that's one of the things for obesity, too. As you well know, obesity is associated between, it's an imbalance in the gut bacteria, and it's an autoimmune disease. And if you imbalance your gut bacteria, and you have two major phylum there, the Bacteroidetes and Firmicutes, and if you increase the Firmicutes, or Firmicutes, depending on what part of the country you're from, if you increase that, you gain weight.
Right. That's the balance between not just one species versus another, but a whole category, a certain type of like constellations of bacteria in balance, or, you know, that has an influence on your weight. It's very interesting. Okay, this is a good inflection point. And wow, you know, you're really blowing my mind here, Dr. Cannon, because you go so far beyond you know, ordinary dentistry, fixing teeth, to a very global understanding of how the oropharynx, the mouth, and the teeth, and the gums, and surrounding structures influence overall health. We're going to proceed in part two to talk more about the whole picture, a holistic approach to the human body via dental science and the latest research. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, our guest, Dr. Mark Cannon, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Please join us for part two.